Marok Podcast tager dig med backstage.
Han har været vidt omkring, hovedpersonen i denne episode af Marok Podcast. Han hedder Michael Schenker. Han har spillet med UFO. Han har spillet med Scorpions. Og så har han selvfølgelig spillet med alle sine egne bands, og dem er der mange af. Der er mange inkarnationer af Michael Schenker Group. Og Michael Schenker Group er netop hovedomdrejningspunktet i denne episode af Marok Podcast. Jeg hedder Sten Skovgaard og siger velkommen indenfor. Manden, som du skal møde i denne podcast, er en sand legende. Han kan i år fejre sit 50-års jubilæum. Og det gør han med et nyt album, der hedder Immortal. Det passer nok meget godt. Velkommen til Marok Podcast med Michael Schenker.
Yeah. First of all, Michael Schenker, congratulations on your 50th anniversary. That's crazy. 50 years.
Thank you. Time flies when you're having fun.
How do you feel about have been on the music scene for 50 years? How do you feel right now?
You know, the funny thing is my brain, my filing system has gone full circle. I'm back to 16, 18, 20 years old. So it's basically, you know, I mean, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Black Sabbath when I was 14 years old. You know, it was that kind of music that I fell in love with, you know, and that style, you know, the metal aspect, you know, and in the period of 50 years, of course, you know, I had desires to do things, you know, to kind of develop, do different things. You know, I had in my middle years, I had a long period of experimental music, you know, which really good stuff, but not commercial. And not many people know about it, I guess. But I did acoustic instrumentals, electro instrumentals, cover versions, you know, with Jim Borgert and Ainsley Dunbar and great musicians with heavy hitters with MSG. It was supposed to be I was hired as a session musician, but I ended up with it ended up as an MSG album. I got tricked, but that was a bittersweet thing. But, you know, I was, you know, having all these great singers from the 80s, you know, and I was playing all the lead guitar. So in the middle years, it's a lot of stuff I did that people are not aware of, which is actually very experimental. But for a guitar lover, you know, very interesting, you know. Very interesting for me. It was something I had to do. And because I did it, I got everything out of my system, you know. So now today I can do anything I want. And so basically, it's, you know, I'm back in touch with where I originally came from, you know, when I... When the distortion came out, the moment I heard Black Sabbath, you know, playing Black Sabbath with that distorted sound, or Jeff Beck or Jimmy Page and Rory Gallagher, Johnny Winter, Leslie West, all of those guys in the early 70s, late 60s, that's when I understood what I wanted to do, and that the guitar is the best, you know, instrument for self-expression in all directions. You can be, you know, because of the distortion, you can have a note sustain, stop it, hit it once, hit it three times. It's like a combination lock. And so I had the 50-year journey, and I also had the desire to experiment. And that's what I did in my middle years. And so then I started to come back to where I came from. And since Temple of Rock, I went, you know, Michael Schenker Fest, and I discovered a unique way of writing. I have a pattern. I have a concept, and it's very solid. And it's very basic, you know, snappy, in the face, and combined with some, you know, mid-tempos. But like a book, you know, you never get bored. You want to make sure the album is always, in some way, gives a nice flavor. And, you know, you don't want to get bored when you read a book. You know, you don't want to get bored when you listen to an album.
But I want to dig into the thing that you said about when you heard Black Sabbath with the distortion, because that was your influence. But you went on to influence yourself, because you made that. Well, you're the master of the midtone. I mean, you did the thing with your with the sustain and the midtone and stuff. How did you find the inspiration for doing that?
Well, you know, I am a kid in a sandbox, I never wanted to be famous. I never wanted competition. I just wanted to have fun playing, just like a kid, recreational, no scoring, no nothing. And I wanted to do it. At some point, I decided I wanted to do it the way I see it, you know. So I opened up my mind. I opened up myself and let fresh colors out into the world. I had the courage. I believed in it. I had a very specific idea. I heard the sound that I wanted to create. I take everything from the inner spring, you know, the infinite the internal spring of creation, you know, where everything comes from. So I'm not part of a trend. I am a trend maker, if anything. You know, 80% of the 80s guitarists copied my style, overexposed it. But because I keep developing, I was always a step ahead anyway. And but it's okay. And you know, they made a lot of money with it. And you know, I kind of joke sometimes. Maybe I should open a bank account for donations. You know, give me some back. But you know, that's just a joke. But you know, I'm just like I said, I have no expectation of being famous or anything like that. So really, when I wrote Lights Out when I was 21 and 76, and it became a hit in America and the rest of the world, you know, I got scared. I ran away because I kind of felt that maybe now the music business wanted me to write hits, you know, and I didn't want to know about it. And so Pete Way persuaded me to come back. I did Obsession, Strangers in the Night. Then I helped the Scorpions with the Left Drive album, opened the doors for America for Rudolph and Klaus. I was very happy about it. And off they went. And I went my own way. And, you know, Michael Schenker Group was the beginning of my, you know, I wanted to find a singer that was not a big ego, with a great voice. And an easygoing person. And I found that in Gary Barden. And so I didn't want to do anything big. I wanted to do something small. But Peter Mensch, he found out about it, that I was free, and he wanted to do big business. So the first step in the right direction was done. Michael Schenker Group, less pressure, et cetera, et cetera. And be the kid in the sandbox, you know, just having fun without expectation, and not being blinded by the trend, et cetera, et cetera. And but Peter Mensch sent me straight to Aerosmith. Then I mean, there were so many different formations, ideas before I actually ended up with Simon Phillips and Mo Forster on the first Michael Schenker Group album, who were the rhythm section with Jeff Beck, who was one of my favorite guitarists. And I was actually ending up in Boston. You know, Peter Mensch said, like, the rhythm section of Aerosmith is available. They want to do your solo album. And he sent me to Boston, and we rehearsed. There was the guy coming in with a beard. I think he had a beard, but it was a big rehearsal room. But I only saw him from the distance. And he turned around and left the room. And he must have gone to Steven Tyler, you know, who was in the hospital at the time, telling him, "Hey, Steven, you have to get better. Michael Schenker is stealing our rhythm section." It was so funny that, you know, then, of course, Steven Tyler got better, and Joe Kramer and Tommy Hamilton carried on with Aerosmith. Then Rush people, they wanted to help my solo album. Then it was the first idea that Cliff Bernstein and Peter Mensch had, which is a you know, an unbelievable team managing so many big bands, especially Metallica. And they, you know, wanted me to do a super band, you know, with Sammy Hagar and Danny Camasi, you know. So it went through all of these different possibilities. It was transition time. It was in 79. And transition time is always a bit difficult until you find your right place, you know. And then eventually we found, you know, Peter Mensch found Simon Phillips and Mo Foster and Roger Glover. And for some reason, I have a connection with Rainbow and Deep Purple. I don't understand. Everybody who leaves the Rainbow joins Michael Schenker group. It's really unbelievable. And, you know, I was asked by Deep Purple to join them in 93. You know, actually in 93, I was asked by the Scorpions to help them with the tour. UFO, Phil Mock begged me to help him. He destroyed UFO completely in 93. He was completely ill and sick and had no way to continue, and visited me with his manager. And then at the same time, Deep Purple asked me to join them. And that all happened in the same month in 93. It was unbelievable. But anyway, so... I have had a lot of adventure in my 50 years, and you know, it's great to have the energy at this point in time to be the young kid. There is no return.
actually want to stay a bit with you on your drummers, because you mentioned it yourself. You ended up with Simon Phillips on the first MSGA record in 1980. He is one of my favorite all-time drummers. He is a hard hitter. He's full of energy, and now he's actually back with you on the new album Immortal. How was it for you to join forces again and work together?
Well, the thing was that we actually had planned to do the biggest Japan tour ever. We did a five. We had planned to do a 5-hour program, A and B set, Forum Hall A, 5,000 seater each night, would have been the same amount as a Budokan, and two nights in Osaka with two drummers, Simon Phillips and Bodo Schopf, and it would have been spectacular. And we had to, of course, cancel it. I was preparing for it for a whole year. It was so much work, and then we had to cancel it, you know. And Simon also did the 30th anniversary of MSG. So Simon and I, you know, and he did In the Midst of Beauty. And so we kind of, you know, back and forth. We love each other. You know, I'm a fan of his. He's a fan of mine. Like you said, he's a fantastic.
And you mentioned Bodo as well, and there's a third drummer in the sessions for Immortal as well, Brian Tichy, former of Whitesnake, and he was actually also a session drummer with Temple of Rock in 2011.
Yeah, he is a number one Michael Schenker fan, and he called up Michael Toss. He heard about the 50th anniversary, and he said he wants to make a tribute to Michael Schenker. And he offered six songs. I went like, unbelievable. Man, that guy, he is something else, you know. I mean, very different from Simon Phillips. But he is so solid and full of ideas and drive. It's really, and so professional. I mean, he called up and said, like, Michael Foss, a buddy of mine, Derek Sharanian, he wants to make a contribution to Michael Schenker, and he wants to play keyboard. I said, well, we already have a keyboard player, Steve Mann. I purposely had Steve only play keyboard. It's a little bit of coloring to make it guitar heavy, and he is very good in coloring, and he's a producer and an engineer, so he knows what he's doing. And what on earth am I going to do with a guy with a top keyboard player, heavy duty, like Derek? He said, like, well, maybe you can have a jam with him, you know, a jam with a keyboard player. I've never done anything like that in my whole life. And he said, well, maybe the first time. I mean, you mean like John Lord and Richie Blackmore? Yeah, maybe, yeah. And I said, well, actually, maybe you're right. It's something that maybe people would kind of be interested in, that I do something I've never done before. And so we did, and found a great place for him, and in a fantastic song, you know, that ended up with Ralph, you know, as a singer, who we, you know, the whole virus thing was a bittersweet experience. Everything happened by accident, you know. I mean, I was going to do the 50th anniversary with a solid band, Ronnie Romero, Bodo Schopf, Steve Mann, Barry Sparks, who called me up over and over and wanting to do the bass, you know, in my band, whatever band I make. And so I had a really good solid band, but because of the virus and the lockdowns and the borders being closed, and we had to start improvising, and that's how we got all of these people sprinkling in one by one, which could have never been planned. That's why I always call this whole situation a bittersweet experience, because what actually came out in the end on this album was something that I could have never planned.
It almost sounds like that you can pick and choose from whoever you want to be on your albums. Are there someone that you haven't worked with yet that you want to work with in the future?
Yeah, Rod Stewart.
All right. Wow. Yeah.
I love him. Such a natural voice. I mean, no matter if he plays pop or not, it is just a fantastic voice.
Have you ever tried to reach out to him?
You know, he's got the same birthday as me. You know, I at some point had like a funny idea, because I'm born 10/1/55, and he is born 10/1 and then whatever 45, I guess 10 years before, 10 year. And Ainsley Gamba, who has been drummer with me for quite a few times, is also born 10/1/55. Wayne Findlay, who was my keyboard guitar player, was also born 10/55. So I wanted to put a band together, all born 10/55. It was just kind of an idea. But anyway, what Stuart and Jeff Beck, you know, I mean, what they did was phenomenal.
Well, that's one for the books, because Rod Stewart, that would be nice on a Michael Schenker record. Well, let's go. I want to know, because I never found out about the Michael Schenker group. Well, it originated in the beginning of the 80s. Then there was the Macaulay Schenker group, and then came a lot of other like parts of the MSG family. And then it ended up with the Michael Schenker Fest on the previous two albums. And now we're back to the Michael Schenker group. So can you please explain all those different states of the Michael Schenker group forming the Michael Schenker Fest into the Michael Schenker group? Why is that so important to pull those apart? I mean,
yeah, it's kind of like this. It's, you know, because of 50 years and actually 40 years of Michael Schenker group, it's actually 40th anniversary, the same time as the 50th Michael Schenker anniversary. It's all together. You know, it's important to categorize, because in the end, everything is Michael Schenker group. Even if it's called Temple of Rock, or if it's called Michael Schenker Fest, it's still Michael Schenker group. But the good thing about it is, by having different titles for the Michael Schenker group as a subtitle, or whatever you call it, you can actually very quickly find out which Michael Schenker group you're talking about, who was in the band, what happened, when, what year, etc., etc. So if I say Michael Schenker's Temple of Rock, you know it's with Roman Radl, Francis Buchholz from the Scorpions, and Dougie White on vocals. You know, if you say Michael Schenker Fest, you know it's all original singers from the 80s with the Graham Bonnet and Robin McCauley and so on, and Gary Barden, and, you know, and then, you know, I added Dougie White as a current singer, so I had the past and the current together on one stage, which was really, really nice. I really enjoyed that. It was a big program. It was a lot of work, you know, up to three hours every night, you know. It seems like the older I get, the harder I have to work, but it's funny. And so you understand that by having that, you know, and then you have the Macaulay Schenker. Macaulay Schenker is only there because I discovered that Robin McCauley was, you know, the best singer for, you know, when I wanted to have a partnership with somebody for a change after Gary Barden left and Chris Glenn in the late 84th, and then I started a new era, and I wanted to have a singer who shares responsibility 50-50 with me, and I found that in Robin McCauley. And so because his surname is McCauley, I said, hey, Robin, and it would be great if we use your M for MSG. We can keep, you know, the logo and everything. And so, of course, he agreed with it. I couldn't care less if he's first or not. It doesn't matter to me. And so if you actually look, you can see that it's all Michael Schenker group, but you have titles that indicate the era, what year it happened, and who with.
So to call the last three albums with Immortal coming out in 2021, The Resurrection, The Revelation, and The Immortal, to call that a trilogy, that wouldn't be wrong?
But there's a difference. There's a difference because I added other musicians to the 50th anniversary, and 50th anniversary is an anniversary. Like a Schenkerfest is the most popular singers of the 80s of the Michael Schenker group, and you know, the 50th anniversary. I was lucky enough to get additional and make it a family celebration. In a way, you are right. It is definitely connected, but it still has a difference.
So you can understand that coming from the outside, it's really hard to find out what is what and what is when in the Michael Schenker history.
Yeah, but now you do, because you have got Temple of Rock, you have Ennis, Michael Schenker Fest, you have the 50th anniversary, you have the MSG with Maureen McCauley, you have the MSG with Cozy Powell and Paul Raymond and stuff like that. And so you kind of, it's actually categorized. You can actually find the place. So if you look for a fan or somebody looks for a particular Michael Schenker group era, all they have to do is, you know, understand that everything is Michael Schenker group, but it's a subtitle, like Michael Schenker's Temple of Rock, you know, Michael Schenker Fest. Everything includes Michael Schenker, but the last word always gives you the indication of what era it was. So it makes it easy for people to find their place very quick, you know, what they're looking for, which Michael Schenker group they're looking for.
When I'm alone and I am feeling blue, dreaming a dream of a world that's lovely and true, faintly the dream of a true and a wonderful world, and no one will care as long as the world will turn. Thank you.
I remember the last time we talked, that was on the release of Revelation in 2019. And what you told me then was that you wanted to... You weren't in the music to earn money. You weren't there to earn fame. You were there to just to play music and to broaden out the knowledge of music to everyone who wanted to listen. And that leads me to one of the songs on the Immortal album, because that sums up everything Michael Schenker to me, In Search of the Peace of Mind. Is that the true core of being Michael Schenker?
It's the first note I ever put on a record. And it's the very first ever written piece of music I ever wrote, In Search of the Peace of Mind. And Michael Foss was sending me the original credits. It says Michael Schenker lyrics, Rudolf Schenker lyrics. We had zero knowledge English. We could have never written any bloody lyrics. And so it was all misinformation. I was 7 years younger. I never looked at anything. I'm the kid in the sandbox. I just play, you know, and I don't study, you know, what's my share? Where, you know, I only found out now, you know, all these years later, you know, things are coming to the surface of, you know, the wrongs and et cetera. And so, In Search of the Peace of Mind was, I wrote it in my mother's kitchen. I was all by myself. It was my very first written piece of music. So, of course, it's the most important song.
Well, that sums it up for me, because that is really Michael Schenker to me. Michael, one thing I want to touch ground with you on is, one thing is that you've been influential over your career. You've influenced guitarists in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s, during the millennium. Well, since you started. But another guy that did exactly the same, we lost in October, Eddie Van Halen. Did you ever get to work with Eddie at some point?
You know, Eddie, like I explained on my website, I mean, he's the best, you know, and the funny thing is, I never listened to music for 50 years, but once in a while, you can't run away from overexposure, you know, like Van Halen or Yngwie Malmsteen, who was sensational, but very quickly died because it was repetitive, but sensational, an acrobat, you know, you cannot overhear things like that. When something sensational comes out, it you know, it creeps into your silent private space. Even if you switch everything off, you still hear it, you know, anything sensational. And so was Eddie. And we became friends, you know. We visited Van Halen when they came. I was with the Scorpions at the time, helping them with the Love Drive album. And actually Van Halen supported UFO at the Starwood in Los Angeles early 70s. And, you know, there was the saying that there was this great guitarist, but I never paid attention to it. But then later, and I never knew that they were actually supporting us until somewhere 2000, somebody told me. I never knew. And they were fans of Scorpions and myself and Uli and so on. And so, somehow we ended up, I think they invited us maybe. Maybe somebody in the Scorpions had a contact. But the Scorpions, when we did the Love Drive album, we went over there in Germany, Düsseldorf, Dortmund, wherever it was a big place. And, we went to the dressing room, said hi, became really good friends. We had a fantastic time. And it was just like, you know, the drummer was showing how he's doing exercise with his bowl, and, you know, and it was just fantastic. And, Eddie always wanted, suggested, and Michael, why don't you get together with your brother, later, you have told me. And So anyway, we had a really good relationship, and we had a great time in the dressing room. The show was great, they did. And we said bye-bye, and then, you know, and that was it. And then they took off in faster than lightning. I mean, they just overtook the whole world, you know. I mean, and I never knew he was tapping, you know, because I don't analyze anything. So that's why Eddie actually was so special for me, because I didn't know how he did it. And later when I found out he was tapping, and everybody was tapping, and tapping went like overexposed, and people didn't want to hear tapping anymore because everybody sounded the same. That's when Eddie started to suffer, of course, because like myself, my own style was overexposed, and by the time I was going to use it, it was already dead. But I always moved forward because I go to the inner spring of infinite creativity, being myself, being the kid in the sandbox, and just be recreational and always come up with something fresh, like, you know, tropical ocean. Every fish has a different look. It's just like a kaleidoscope. If you go to the inner spring of infinite creation, where all the creation comes from, then there's always something new. Each person can do that if they have the courage or if they have the desire to be themselves. You know, many people want to get a piece of the pie of a trend, make money, get all the girls, etc., etc. And then there's the other side. You know, the people that are artists, and they just want to self-express. And I'm the one that loves to self-express.
You actually nailed it there, because I talked to Eddie's son the other day, and I asked him, so did your father actually learn how to play? And he said, well, yeah, he showed me something, and he did what he did. And then he said, you should just do it like this. But he couldn't, because, you know, he's Eddie Van Halen. Nobody can do what he did. So basically, he was a bad teacher, but he was an excellent guitarist.
Yeah, you know, and he was the best. You know, he had melody and sense of rhythm. He did this tapping thing that I didn't know about. But even without it, he had qualities that were just perfect.
Yeah, and he had the desire to do things that weren't done before, because I only found out 2 months ago that some of the solos on the Van Halen albums that I thought were actually guitar solos were actually synthesizers put through pedals and amps and stuff to sound like guitars, but they were actually synth. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we don't know.
Exactly, but it's music, so we just have to hear and picture it in our own minds, I guess.
Yep.
Michael, thank you so much for your time. Our time is up right now. I hope the best for you and the Michael Schenker Group in the future.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for the interview.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
My Rock Podcast.
Disse var ordene fra Michael Schenker, manden bag Michael Schenker Group, og måske en af de mest stilskabende guitarister igennem historien. Jeg hedder Sten Skovgaard. Tusind tak, fordi du lyttede med.
My Rock Podcast.